Welcome one and all as we close out this week here at the Damage Report. I'm John Arola. You know who that is? That guy over there? That's Brett Ehrlich. How's it going, Brett?
Oh, me. It's going great, John. It's tree trimming day in the neighborhood. And so if you hear it, I'm sorry. It's not my trees. And it looks really horrifying what they're doing to these sycamores or whatever.
I weep for the sycamores. First of all, I don't hear anything. And second of all, they did like the main street near where I live. They like trimmed down everything, and not like trimmed, like got rid of the vegetation. There was a tree that was so beautiful and so full, and they took it down. They gave it a Brazilian, basically.
Hello.
It ruined that whole area. I don't know why they do it. Maybe it's like a water conservation thing. I don't know, but I hated it.
No, you have to realize that you got the beautiful moment before it became a problem. What you need to understand about most domestic plants, and specifically like most like things like rose bushes, there's this thing called deadheading, which essentially means that flowers and such are like masochistic, like almost perversely masochistic, where like they like it when you cut parts of them. Like once the flower happens, it's putting all its energy into making seeds and stuff. They love it when you just prune it off, and then it'll be like, I'm gonna grow 15 more roses.
Okay. For that and more lessons in botany and landscaping, please stay tuned to the Damage Report. I have a little bit of additional breaking news. I made the incredibly bad decision to eat a handful of salted peanuts before we went live, and I'm kind of feeling like it's gonna be an issue for the rest of my life. Right.
It's crawling up into the nose passages.
Yeah. I feel like lines of salt have scratched into my trachea all the way down. So I might die. Anyway, thank you for being here. I understand that at this point you're regretting that decision. So let's just press forward, okay? We have a lot of news to talk about. Not only some of the news around the developments and the responses to the death of Jordan Neely, but also more corruption in the Thomas family. This time, not Clarence. I like couples that are a little bit competitive with each other, and I like that Clarence and Ginny have got sort of like a who's gonna be more corrupt thing going on. And so we're gonna be talking about that, and there's just a whole lot of stuff. Ron DeSantis is taking on the Supreme Court. That'll be fun. And that's just in the first hour. Coming up in the aftermath, we've got more leaked video of Tucker Carlson being just the grossest. We're gonna be talking a little bit about what might come from the Hollywood writer's strike that's going on right now. And of course, we have Garbage People of the Week. So look forward to that. And along the way, if you wanna send us any comments, tweets, super chats, we'll respond as we go. You might even get yourself a $100 Blue Apron gift card with a particularly good comment. So get those in. And with all that said, Brett, you ready to start the show?
Let's do it.
Let's in fact do it. Usually we try to start with something that's like big, but kind of light. We're going in a different direction today, but don't worry. We do have lighter stuff coming on, but we have some serious stuff to get to first. As of at least when we're recording this show, there has been no arrest yet in the chokehold killing of Jordan Neely. We're gonna give you all of the details, including some footage. Understand, this is about as serious as stories get. The footage is obviously very rough. So with that in mind, let's go to this. So what you just saw is absolutely devastating. It is a person gradually being killed. That's what it is. It's a disaster and a tragedy. And I wish that I could say that and know that everyone agrees with me. But unfortunately, as you'll see, some people don't think that this was that big of a tragedy, or that if there's a tragedy, it's that people have a big issue with what happened. But in any event, we're first gonna give you more details. So Monday afternoon, Neely was killed after being held in a chokehold. You saw it in the video, by a Marine veteran on a subway after Neely got on the train and shouted at passengers that he was hungry, thirsty, and fed up with having nothing. After he stops moving, the riders hold him down for about 50 more seconds. He was later pronounced dead at a nearby hospital, apparently from compression to his neck as a result of the chokehold, according to a spokeswoman for the medical examiner who ruled his death a homicide. A witness said Neely did not harm anyone, nor did they see him armed with any weapon. So that is apparently the situation, as well as how he died. I await the conspiracy theories on right-wing media about how he stubbed his toe 10 years ago, and that's actually why he died, not the choking that he was experiencing on video. In any event, that has led to local political officials responding in a variety of different ways. You have this from Governor Kathy Hochul saying it became very clear that he was not going to cause harm to these other people. The video of three individuals holding him down until the last breath was snuffed out of him, I would say that was a very extreme response. The mayor of New York, though, Eric Adams, says there are many layers to this. I have faith in the criminal justice system, and I'm gonna let the process take its place. So look, that's the sort of reaction that you get from politicians quite a bit when they don't want to weigh in on something. I kind of feel like that's needlessly cowardly. Like, okay, we can find out more details, we can learn more. But the idea that you can't say that it's terrible that this is what happened, that God, if literally anything different could have gone down that did not result in a person being choked to death, that that would be an improvement. And by the way, when I'm criticizing him, I'm not just criticizing Eric Adams for the statement you saw. When Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, obviously also a politician from New York, spoke out against this, he criticized her, saying she was being irresponsible. I mean, we saw what happened. We know that it's been ruled a homicide. She's not like a judge, okay? So when she rushes out with a statement, she's not sentencing him to life in prison, the guy who choked him out, okay? That's not the sort of irresponsibility that is going on, but that they're saying is. She's just making clear that this is a terrible thing that should have never happened. In any event, we're gonna get to more reactions, but Brett, what do you think about this?
I don't know. I think the whole game of like, what is the right way to say, let's have a, you know, prosecution and a trial. Like, I think that's a weird game. I don't understand it. I don't know why that's like what litmus tests we're putting out for politicians anyway. I stand behind, like, let's find out as much as we can about what happened. After that happens, then I can start making definitive statements. I can definitely make definitive statements like, this is horrible. This looks like a man is dying and they're killing him. I can talk about this weird instinct that a lot of people have to suddenly become like the hero of the situation, gung ho. It's my responsibility, probably yeah. Because I've been egged on by Fox News to think that, no, they are all trying to kill us. Everyone on the subway who seems disturbed is trying to kill me. That I can talk about, because that I see every day, that I have all the evidence I need of. I would caution everybody when they suddenly get into the like, oh, I know everything about this situation based on the video that I saw, if right now and immediately. Mm-hmm. Just because if the script were flipped, I don't want the other people doing that in a situation that seems bad for my political beliefs.
I'm fine, and
what do I want, Mayor? I know everything I need to know about Mayor Eric Adams. Mm-hmm. Like, I know he's a former police, he's from the police department, and I know that he's trying to hold the city together. I know that he is part of an overreaction to people who are good-naturedly trying to reform the criminal justice system. That's why he's there. I know everything I need to know, except about what happened in the subway. I'm pretty sure I know what happened. I'm pretty sure there was a guy who's having some issues on the subway, who has mental illness issues, is what it's, but even that, it seems like that was the case. And I've been in subways in all kinds of cities where this kind of thing happens, and you ignore it because you just get this feeling, if you've done that a number of times, that like nothing bad's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. But I also, it looks like these guys are holding the guy down because they think that's their job, when it really very much is not. And the reason I know that is because people on the right tell me that that's not my job when it serves their political ends.
Well, and specifically holding down and applying a chokehold. Like I would hope that at this point, there's no one in America who doesn't realize that chokeholds kill people sometimes. But in particular, if you're in New York, I don't think that you get to plead ignorance about the danger of applying long-term chokeholds to people. In any event, I want to get to some of the other reactions. As I mentioned AOC, so I want to give you some of that. In the wake of the killing of Jordan Neely, some politicians have spoken out about how devastating this is and how it should be avoided at all costs. Here's some of what Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has had to say. Tweeting, I have yet to hear a real explanation from any official hesitating to condemn the killing of Jordan Neely about what makes condemning this violence so, quote, complicated. Killing is wrong. Killing the poor is wrong. Killing the mentally ill is wrong. Why is that so hard to say? And to be clear, while so many who should be pointing out that that's a bad thing seem to have trouble saying that it's a bad thing, understand that during the period where those of us who think we shouldn't be choking the lives out of each other on public transportation are being told to be incredibly cautious, on the other side, those who like this sort of behavior are not waiting very long. They're tweeting about how this guy is a hero, and they instantly know, based on reading the story and definitely seeing the photos of the people involved, that this was the best thing that could have possibly happened. He should not be attacked. He should be lauded. He'll, for all we know, he's being extended invitations to speak at right-wing events. We have no idea what his politics is. The guy who actually did it, we don't know who the person is because they haven't been identified. But it's the sort of vigilante violence that the right loves so much. They want to see more of this. So particularly at this time, I would say it's on us who want to see less people being brutally killed to speak out as well. In any event, AOC goes on to say, Neely's last words were literally about how going to jail was easier than accessing the social safety net support to get back on his feet and lead a life. Yet leaders want to raise his record as if that warrants a public execution on the subway. What have we come to? That point about his past, about the fact that he had had run-ins with law enforcement or whatever in the past, I talked at length yesterday about in the pre-port. There is almost nothing that the right loves more than using someone's past as a moral justification for their murder at a time when the person doing the killing had no idea about any of that. You know what? Sometimes they do it with someone having had run-ins with the police or whatever. You know, when you look at Kenosha, one of the people that Kyle Rittenhouse shot had done bad stuff in the past. So that provided a justification for Kyle Rittenhouse, a guy who had no idea about any of that. Sometimes they have to stretch a little bit more, and they'll go and they'll just find like photos of you on social media that provide an ex post facto justification for your killing that, again, the killer had no idea about. This isn't how any functioning moral system should work. And it's particularly perverse to see this sort of narrative trotted out so often from people that assert that they have a perfect system of morality that has literally been handed to them in book form by the creator of the universe. And yet it doesn't seem to have led to much of the empathy that is so closely associated with figures like Jesus Christ himself. In any event, Brett, I apologize, I'm pretty angry. Why don't we get to a little bit more of the video that we have here, and then we'll jump into a conversation. Here is Jesse Waters.
Now, if a cop was on that subway with Neely going wild like that, he probably wouldn't be dead. Men are having to take matters into their own hands to protect themselves and innocent civilians. Women are whispering to me all day that they're glad a man took action instead of sitting there and staring at his phone, pretending nothing's going down. They're not happy Neely's dead, of course. No one is. But they're happy someone's protecting them. If Neely had been institutionalized, wouldn't be dead. If Neely had been incarcerated, wouldn't be dead. And maybe if the left hadn't defunded and demoralized the police, he wouldn't be dead. But he is dead. And the Democrats don't care about him. They care about blaming somebody else.
Yeah. If he'd been institutionalized, he wouldn't be dead. If he'd been locked up, he wouldn't be dead. I would add to that list, if he hadn't been choked, he wouldn't be dead. Again, we already know that he apparently was not threatening anyone. He wasn't getting violent. Jesse Waters called what happened a response to him being wild. He was, we presume, yelling. He was making a scene. That's wild, according to Jesse Waters. You know what I think is wild? I think choking the life out of someone is wild. I think it's way wilder than anything Neely is alleged to have done. And you'll notice that doesn't bother Jesse Waters. He in fact says the Democrats don't care about him. I want you to respond. You know, you can't necessarily respond specifically to me, but feel free to send in comments, but respond at least to yourself. Scale of 1 to 10, how much does Jesse Waters care that Jordan Neely is dead? Does it even rank as a 1? Does anyone think that he gives a single damn about this? I can't, look, I'm not a psychic. I can't get to his head, but I see his whole vibe and I have a pretty good feeling. Brett, what do you think?
Jesse Waters is happy that Neely's dead, 100%. It makes him happy, it gives him something to talk about. It's a very easy story for him to cover because he just gets to paint by numbers all the other crappy takes that he's had about situations like this. And he basically counters what he originally said. No one's happy that Neely's dead, but you know, I'm happy that this guy did what he did, which resulted in Neely being dead, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, it's always the test of like, why are people saying what they're saying? The motivation for AOC saying what she's saying is to protect the most vulnerable among us. She's not trying to be an a-hole. What's Eric Adams doing? A, probably trying to hold a city together. I understand that's a very difficult position to be in, but at least he is, what he's saying at the end is like, let's have a legal system evaluate this. That's less contemptible than what Jesse Waters is doing, which is essentially citing completely anecdotal non-evidence to support this kind of behavior, to essentially endorse taking action to kill someone on the subway when subway stuff is happening on the subway. That's it. He's being an a-hole.
Yeah.
And he relishes it. He relishes that this is happening.
Yeah.
Like I caution people to run and say like they know everything that happened on that subway. It sounds like Jesse Waters knows everything that happened on that subway. He doesn't. And if he's gonna get mad, like if anything comes out bad, more information about people being threatened or more less information about people feeling threatened, like these guys just decided to do it on a whim, he's not gonna take that into consideration. He'll only use anything that strengthens his BS bloviations and he'll use that as a cudgel and he'll ignore anything that makes his position weaker. He's talking about defunding the police. This is a lie. Like police haven't been defunded. In most major cities, police funding has gone up. And he's just saying that they've been defunded. They haven't.
The New York City, the NYPD budget was $10.9 billion last year. $10.9 billion.
And I hate this argument that they've demoralized the police. It's like a lot of what's happened has demoralized people in general. And what is it, people's fault for calling out injustice? That's their argument. It's their fault for calling out injustice because they aren't nice enough to people with guns and body armor and $10.9 billion.
Yeah.
Like it's engage in the conversation. Don't just turn around and call people who are trying to make the world better evil.
Yeah, and bear in mind, he said they did what they had to do. He is telling his audience they were not wrong. Not they should have done something, but God, don't kill the guy. No, he doesn't have a problem with the process. He's telling his viewers, do more of this. If you're in this situation, if somebody's being loud, you kill them. That's what you do. That's what I am being told by Christian after Christian after Christian after Christian. Just like Jesus would, you choke the life out of them if they're being inconvenient. And by the way, and again, you know, I will never miss an opportunity to point out that the supposedly populist Fox News that is worried about people who've been left behind by the system has no problem with a guy who, as AOC pointed out, was talking about how difficult it was to get help, who was as desperate a person as you can be. Like maybe in the wrong venue, maybe to the wrong people, asked for help and was killed as a result of it. He doesn't have a single problem with that. None of them do. Anyway, can we, you know what? Can we just play one more video? We're gonna skip 3. Let's just go to 4. So a quick video of what happened when Sean Hannity was talking about this. Let's play this and close out our segment.
Take a look at your screen. After making violent threats, acting erratically, a mentally ill, homeless guy with a long history of violent crime was, well, subdued by a bystander, a 24-year-old Marine vet. Now, the homeless man, his name is Jordan Neely.
Yeah, so he was restrained. That's how Sean Hannity, I guess, doesn't want to say. This video that we're playing, yeah, he died as a result of that. He was restrained. But we can forget a little bit about Sean Hannity because he had a live studio audience. And they were alive, all right. One woman shouted, "Woo!" She saw a man being killed and said, "Woo." Brett, what do you think?
It was a chokehold. It wasn't they got in a physical altercation, there was a push, and someone hit their head and died. You choked them and they died. Choking is a way people die, and you did it. And guys, like, just to give you an idea how horny the right is for this kind of violence, she couldn't contain herself at hearing that a person was dead. Well, maybe not hearing that a person was dead, because Hannity knows he can't accurately portray what happened in the video. Then the video is what we can see.
Yeah.
They are claiming that they know everything about what happened. By just identifying the parts of it that serve their narrative and claiming there's nothing more to see here.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I could like talk to their audience and be like, you say constantly how you have been abused by the system, how it's set up in a way that's hurting you. Now, you may think that it's like the deep state doing that, or globalists, or whatever, whatever reason, dark reason you would give to it, whatever. What should happen to you if you get desperate? It's so easy for them to think, Jordan Neely, he's not like me. Yeah, but what if it was you? What if you literally had nothing to eat, nowhere to go, and you were desperate? Should you be choked to death as a result of you snapping and yelling or whatever? Is that acceptable? But of course, it's like that requires empathy, an empathy that you're not going to get out of people who woo at murder.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're gonna see. We'll see what happens. So far, the person has been identified. There's been no charges or whatever. We're gonna see what happens. We're gonna take our first break as well. When we come back, we've got a lot more to talk about. One of the people in that photo is corrupt. Well, actually two, but in this case, it's not Clarence Thomas so much. Ginny Thomas deciding to make a play for corrupt Thomas of the day. Here's what we found out. In the last 24 hours, conservative judicial activist Leonard Leo arranged for Ginny Thomas, wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, to be paid tens of thousands of dollars for consulting work just over a decade ago. And if that's not bad enough for you, he also made it explicit that he did not want her name to be on the paperwork. They tried to cover this up, and thankfully, as a result of the work of journalists at the Washington Post, we have the details, and here they are. Back in January of 2012, Leo instructed GOP pollster Kellyanne Conway, popping up in a fun little cameo, to build a nonprofit group he advises and use that money to pay Ginny Thomas. The same year, the nonprofit, the Judicial Education Project, filed a brief to the Supreme Court in a landmark voting rights case. Don't worry, we'll be talking about that in just a minute. Leo is a key figure in a network of nonprofits that has worked to support the nominations of conservative judges. He told Conway that he wanted to, quote, give Ginny Thomas another 25K. So there was probably money before, but this is what we found. He emphasized that the paperwork should have, quote, no mention of Ginny, of course. Well, if it's of course, then you shouldn't have written it, buddy, but he did. And so Conway's firm, the polling company, did send the $25,000 bill. Per Leo's instructions, it listed the purposes, quote, supplement for constitution polling and opinion consulting, a label designed to make you fall asleep before you finish reading it so you don't realize what's actually going on. By the way, overall, they paid $80,000 to Thomas's firm between June 2011 and June 2012, with expectations of paying another $20,000. So that gets you to $100,000 in consulting work that she totally did. So why is this important? Well, just by the very nature of paying a Supreme Court justice's wife, it seems suspect. But specifically, in December 2012, the Judicial Education Project submitted an amicus brief in Shelby County versus Holder, a case challenging a landmark civil rights law aimed at protecting minority voters. The court struck down a formula in the Voting Rights Act that determined which states had to obtain federal clearance before changing their voting rules and procedures. Clarence Thomas was part of the 5-4 majority. Now, he in theory should have recused himself because federal law requires justices to recuse if their quote impartiality might reasonably be questioned. I feel like I'm questioning it in a way that is reasonable, but he didn't, which allowed them to strike it down. Now, the joke is potentially on Leonard Leo, because I have a feeling Clarence Thomas would have struck that down in his sleep. I don't think he needed to be paid the $100,000 to do that. But in any event, he shouldn't have been voting on it because there was a massive conflict of interest. It wasn't the first conflict of interest. There are many, but it is nice to see Ginny Thomas getting involved so directly in all of this. Brett, what do you think?
Hunter Biden is Joe Biden's family member. Mm-hmm. And did coke off his own penis. I don't remember exactly what the details are of that. But the right wing is saying, there is corruption in the Bidens because this guy's family member did something inappropriate, something, a lot of money. Ginny Thomas, last time I checked, your wife is a member of your family, is getting not only essentially direct payments from a guy whose single mission in life is to create a system that pays for judges to give them handouts. And the entire right wing is like, nothing to see here. And in addition, this same group that's mad that the people on the left point out very obviously racist things. And the right's like, why you call everything racist? Hilariously, the cherry on the top of this dumb Sunday is people like Hannity saying, you know what? Because you're pointing out what is very obviously giving this guy's wife and him money and vacations and all other kinds of handouts, just because I pointed that out, oh my God, I'm a racist. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious. It would be hilarious, I guess, if it wasn't so troubling. And the sad part is, apparently it's illegal to point out that there are people that are trying to take down the integrity of the institutions that we need to have faith in. And when we point it out, somehow we're the bad ones.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And we're being unfair, and we're specifically targeting Clarence Thomas, although people have pointed out great stuff involving Kavanaugh and Gorsuch as well as the more liberal justices too. And the only response from the right is generally, well, Sotomayor is bad too, to which I say, yeah, let's do something about that. But they don't want anything. That's what aboutism is for. It is not an attempt to make sure that two things are treated with the same level of seriousness, except insofar as that level of seriousness is not at all. Anyway, let's get to some of the reactions to this. The news breaking that Leonard Leo, this well-connected, political donor who's trying to make the courts more conservative, giving all this money to Ginny Thomas, not a reason to worry. I am being told by Leonard Leo, who says, it's no secret that Ginny Thomas has a long history of working on issues within the conservative movement. And part of that work has involved gauging public attitudes and sentiment. The work here that she did here did not involve anything connected with either the court's business or with other legal issues. As if that should reassure anyone who thinks that this is corruption. If you pay the wife of a guy who's going to rule on it, it doesn't matter if the work she was doing to get the payment was directly related to it. The timing is the scary thing. You paid her right before he ruled on the issue. I think he is intelligent enough to understand that. He is gambling that you are not. Goes on to say, I have known Clarence and Ginny Thomas since 1990. They are dear friends and are people of tremendous goodwill and integrity. He's saying that after all of the news that's broken over the past few weeks. Anybody who thinks that Justice Thomas is influenced in his work by what others say and do, including his wife Ginny, is completely ignorant of who this man is and what he stands for. And anybody who thinks Ginny Thomas would seek to influence the Supreme Court's work is completely ignorant of the respect she has for her husband and the important role that he and his colleagues play in our society. Okay, that's his defense. But you might say then, but if there was nothing wrong, why did you specifically tell Kellyanne Conway to leave her name off of it, to make it harder to track it? He has an answer for that. He says, knowing how disrespectful, malicious, and gossipy people can be, I have always tried to protect the privacy of Justice Thomas and Ginny. Oh, okay. Yeah, people are gossipy. That's true. TMZ would have been all over that payment back when it happened. No, dude, come on. Everybody understands exactly what he was trying to do, why he was trying to hide it. He didn't want you to know. It's the sort of elite backroom behind the scenes dealing that conservatives love to pretend to have a problem with on Fox News. And then when they get an example of it, absolute crickets from them. What do you think, Brett?
No, I agree with that part. It's like basically he sounds like, how hilarious would it be with every crime if the criminal was like, I didn't write payment for killing my wife, because you know how gossipy people can get. I didn't write that in the memo on the check. No, you put it in cash and you walk it over. I've only seen Office Space about 15 times, but essentially to hide the source of money by channeling it through an intermediary is essentially the definition of money laundering. This guy is hiding the source of money by channeling it through an intermediary. He's paying Ginny Thomas. And honestly, like, my brother was like an opposition researcher in Alabama. He got someone thrown off a case because the husband of the prosecutor was connected to the people who had a political interest in the prosecution. And so that Laura Canary was thrown off the case because there was a reasonable suspicion of impropriety. The argument that the right wing has, get this, is that there is no real difference between how close they are as friends and essentially what would be on its face determined to be improper conduct.
Yeah.
Like there, it's so entrenched, the corruption, that there's nothing you can really do about it. Their argument is everybody in this cabal is all such close friends, you can't get mad at them. They're friends because they have benefits.
Yeah. There's a term for that, actually. Yeah, there isn't, or at least there should not be, a bribery buddy loophole. Like if you picture the classic like bag of money being handed under a bathroom stall, I don't care if they've gone to TGI Fridays together a few times. Like that's not the issue. Anyway, by the way, there is a comment that seems relevant based on some of the examples you've been given. Your wife has messaged, Brett seems to have thought through this wife killing strategy a little too well.
I'm watching Love and Death right now, and everybody else should too.
I might, my wife's watching it. We'll see. Anyway, with that said, we need to move on to other news because there's a lot of other news to move on to. So why don't we jump into this? Governor Ron DeSantis has signed a bill this week allowing the state to seek the death penalty in sexual battery cases involving children younger than 12. This is, at least insofar as the Supreme Court has ruled in the past, explicitly unconstitutional. But the Supreme Court is what it is, and so everyone stay tuned to find out whether they side with him. But first, the legislation, which is going to go into effect in October of this year, requires a minimum sentence of life in prison without parole for cases of sexual battery against young children. The state will require prosecutors seeking the death penalty in these cases to identify at least two aggravating factors, including whether the defendant had a history of sexual predation or holds a custodial position over the children. The bill received bipartisan support in the legislature, even though it didn't have to. Republicans hold a supermajority. They can and do whatever they want. But anyway, the Senate Minority Leader, a Democrat, did co-sponsor it. By the way, just bear this in mind going forward if this bill does take effect. Florida is already the state with the most exonerations from the death penalty. 30 people have been exonerated since 1976. What that means is if we didn't have a long appeals process and if we didn't have individuals and organizations attempting these exonerations, literally dozens of people who were 100% innocent of what they were being charged with would have been executed by the state. And that bothers some people, none of them are Republicans elected in Florida, even though they're always suspicious of government power, except when it's killing a person. In any event, as I said, this is explicitly unconstitutional. The legislation is in direct violation of the US Supreme Court decision in Kennedy versus Louisiana, which found it unconstitutional for states to use capital punishment for a crime other than murder. The death penalty should not be expanded to instances where the victim's life was not taken, the ruling said. That is so clear, so explicit. Ron DeSantis knows that and doesn't care. He says he's prepared to take this law all the way to the US Supreme Court to overrule the existing precedent, which, oh my God, that would require like activist judges or something. And don't conservatives have a super majority of the Supreme Court? Yes, they do. And yes, they might overturn it because precedent means literally nothing to these people. What do you think, Brett?
So Ron DeSantis's argument is that you're a pedophile unless you like pedophiles unless you want to kill people. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, they're hoping that that's simplistic argument.
If all you wanted, this is what Ron DeSantis's rhetorical strategy is. He wants to say he's more strict, and this is all the same argument they had against a woman's right to choose. Right? They love fundamentalism. Fundamentalism is like this sense of moral superiority where no one really applies anything nuanced to anything, and they can sit on their high horse, look at their doctrine and say, you're evil and I'm good because of my doctrine, which I apply no nuance to.
Yeah.
And that's this. They want to say, oh, you're killing babies. Oh, you're raping children unless you take the most strict stance. And in this case, it's the death penalty. He's trying to say that you're more for child rape than I am. Mm-hmm. Which is just like so, it's lazy, it's insane. Basically, if I say I just want to lock them up for a very long time and get them away from children and I want to punish them too, he's saying, well, you don't want to kill them, which makes me better than you. Mm-hmm. Which is it's one of those like, They frame a ridiculous argument in a way that makes other people seem ridiculous. But their argument is ridiculous. Like he's like, unless you want to kill more people, you're a pedophile. You know, and they're calling people who like dudes who put on a dress pedophiles because yeah. They want to put on a dress.
Yeah. They like the idea of increasing the number of people that are being killed. You can apply that to virtually any situation. It also applies to the state. The same state that they continually say they want to make it small and powerless and all that, they believe it should be killing more people. The government should be killing more of its citizens in all cases. That's what they want. You know, unless those citizens have themselves killed people who are like ringing the wrong doorbell or driving their car purposefully into protesters. The government should not get involved in that, but in this case, they should. And by the way, to the person who might say, and they will do exactly what Brett said. They love the idea because all of this in terms of political narratives from the right over the past few years is just designed to make people who are not particularly clever, not particularly curious, have an easy out to feel morally and intellectually superior will be, why do you think that they shouldn't kill a pedophile? Oh, that's easy. I don't think they should be killing anybody. Should lock them up for the rest of life.
Listen,
I
think by and large, if you kill, this is my instinct. If you kill someone, we should kill you. I'm fine. Like if that is my instinct, right? But I know how often we get it wrong.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's why I'm not for the death penalty. By that definition, if I followed my instinct, it's not after thinking about it, my position, but my instinct, oh, you kill someone, we should shoot you in the face and kill you till you're dead. But then if I endorse a system that does that and people end up dying as a result unjustly, then by my own logic, you should come and kill me because I endorse that system.
Yeah.
And that's just a ridiculous position to have. So I'm against the death penalty for that and other reasons, but yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, they get it wrong. And again, the same government that should be powerless and yet it should be able to kill gets everything wrong, we're told, but should be making the decision as to who lives and who dies.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. Okay, with that said, we do have to take our second break. More to come after this. We've got news to talk about, so don't go anywhere. Let's jump into it. Bernie Sanders is back and he's not satisfied to just accept, I guess, whatever crumbs come workers' way. He feels like during the periods of American political history where the labor movement was able to make big gains, we have to start with big asks. And he's trying to do that, or at the very least catches up to many European countries. So we're gonna jump through a few of the suggestions he's made recently that I hope take off. One is that he's calling for a 32-hour work week with no pay cuts, saying it's time to make sure that working people benefit from rapidly increasing technology, not just large corporations that are already doing phenomenally well. So look, this could come in the form of a 4-day work week. It could come in the form of shorter days. If this strikes you as insane and a non-starter, then you probably live and grew up in America. France has a 35-hour work week. It's considering reducing it to 32. Norway and Denmark are at 37 right now. The idea that back when 40 hours was decided on, that we had achieved some sort of cosmically significant perfect number that should never change has always struck me as odd, when it was in fact just a thing that was landed on as a result of ongoing negotiations. The fact that we have a 2-day weekend is not like a necessity that is baked into the fabric of our reality. All of these things can change. And it is a little bit weird that we have had decades and decades and decades of new technology, increased productivity that one would think should lead to extra benefits, and yet haven't. We work, you know, more hours. We don't have an extra weekend day. But you have to bear in mind that it did in fact generate those extra benefits. The extra benefits just didn't go to the workers. But profits are way up. CEOs make way more money than they used to. And so maybe that could just be spread around a little bit. And thankfully, Bernie Sanders pushing for that. What do you think, Brett?
More things like this. Like, this is exactly the right rhetorical framing for any ask, period. So often, like, there's these movements that are like, let me say something that gets your attention but makes you hate me. This doesn't make anyone hate you. Like, this is, oh, I too want to work fewer hours for the same amount of money. You would have to be crazy to be against this as a worker, right? You want this. Get this argument out there, get as many people talking about it as possible so that everybody has to come back and start engaging in it. And then you can break out things like, well, I'm more productive due to the technology you're trying to replace me with, and the technology is cheaper, and my ability to take further steps than the technology is higher. So I don't understand why you have a problem with it, unless you can show me financially why it's not tenable for you. Because I will also have more time off to be a consumer.
Yeah, exactly. A consumer, also a human. You know, they say constantly that they want people to engage with the economy, sure, but they also talk like anytime there's a social ill, anytime there's a failure of an individual or whatever, you will be told that it's a breakdown of the family, the social fabric, all of that stuff. When exactly are we supposed to maintain or repair the social fabric exactly? People are exhausted when they get home from their incredibly tiring jobs. Maybe a little bit more time spent with family and friends would have untold social benefits. I don't think that's impossible to imagine. And in terms of the economic effect, look, this isn't obviously going to work for every single job in every single industry. The idea of having at least 2 days on the weekend makes sense, except as a waiter, I had to work on the weekends because that's when people are at restaurants. So no one is an absolutist or simplistic when it comes to this, but we can certainly talk about it. And we already, it's not like we don't have data about what the likely effects would be. There have been many, many, many experiments across many different countries and in the US that have indicated that productivity can actually go up as a result of cutting hours. Even if that's difficult to imagine, that is what has actually been demonstrated. And by the way, this isn't the only thing he's doing. He's also introducing a bill to raise the federal minimum wage to $17 per hour. Some people might say, well, wait, wasn't it $15 an hour? Well, perhaps at some point it was. There was inflation, and it's also been literally years since that was the thing that people were pushing for. And so again, as 2 weekend days and 40 hours are not cosmically significant, $15 an hour as the minimum wage is also not the answer for the rest of time. Sorry, I wish we had more time to discuss that. But with that, why don't we move into our last topic? We're gonna move from a reasonable politician to the exact opposite. North Carolina's current lieutenant governor, a Republican named Mark Robinson, is running for governor. And that means there's gonna be some extra scrutiny. And take a look at what people have found when trolling through his past social media activity. Here's what he posted in the wake of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School mass shooting. Let me see if I have this correct. A spoiled, angry, disobedient child shot and killed 17 of his classmates. And now spoiled, angry, know-it-all children are trying to tell law-abiding adults that we must give up our constitutional right to own certain weapons. Cue Rod Serling, because this must be an episode of The Twilight Zone. David Hogg and the rest of these silly little immature media prostitutes need to grab a passy, have seat and time out, and shut up. The very ideology of conservatism that your liberal mollycoddling string pullers have taught you to despise is exactly what you and your schools have desperately needed to prevent these massacres, as well as the multitude of failures that exist in public education. Look, substantively, the idea that what they need is a more conservative approach to gun regulation, and if they did that, the shooting wouldn't have happened, is ironic. When they had a conservative approach to gun regulation and the shooting happened. But I also understand that it seems weird to focus on that. When he called people who had just survived a mass shooting prostitutes. It's, by the way, a term that he likes. If we could jump ahead of graphic 3, he also tweeted out the term prostitutes. He was very impressed with himself when he came up with that. Brett, what do you think?
It's so weird that his photo is him looking so jovial and friendly in the little photo in the corner. If you go back to those graphics, any of his tweets, he's just like sitting in his minivan or his room like, hi, it's me, Mark Keith Robinson. Also, Mark Keith Robinson, with those three names, you sound like a serial killer, even if you're not like talking about prostitutes. So weird. And that happens a lot, like in the Bud Light argument. The Bud Light, Dylan Reeves or whatever the name is, like that argument. What happened is I would watch people start off being like, this is terrible. They're marketing it to kids. No, they're not. It's beer. It's for grownups. But then suddenly they're talking about his like preteen breasts and or like, you know, the quote, his preteen breasts all in the quote. It's like, you guys are the pervy weirdos.
You want an example of that? These
kids who just watch their classmates get gunned down. And like this is, you think this is a winner. You think this argument is a winner to go after the victims of a mass shooting because they're upset there was a mass shooting?
Well, Brett, it worked for Marjorie Greene.
Yeah, so, and there are, yeah, did it?
So hold on, you brought up the perversion. So we have to go to this example. The guy who's calling these kids prostitutes also had a lot to say about Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby. Take a look at this.
I really believe, and you and me both are students of history. When Joseph Stalin was in power, what did he create? He created a climate of what? A climate of fear. He arrested some of his top generals and top leaders. He threw them in the gulags. He executed them. Why do you think he did that? He did that so that the common man would be really afraid, because the common man would say, look, if he threw a general and a bitch shot in jail, he'll definitely crush me. Mm-hmm. I honestly believe, Chris, that is what the left is doing with the Harvey Weinsteins, the Bill Cosbys, the Matt Lauers. They have picked out an elite group of people that have committed these so-called sexual crimes or whatever kind of crimes they've committed or offenses, and they have thrown those people underneath the bus, eating their own, to breed a spirit of fear in people so people will be afraid to stand up and speak up and get involved.
So the guy who's talking about prostitutes thinks that Harvey Weinstein, Bill Cosby, Matt Lauer have committed so-called crimes. I would not leave him alone with school children, but that's just me. Brett, final thoughts quick.
I mean, when you're on Politics and Prophecy, it's like, oh, you're a crazy person. Got it. All right, I understand. I love what was Harvey Weinstein trying to quote get involved with?
Nothing good from what I remember. No.
People in his shower at the Peninsula Hotel. Gross.
Absolutely gross. And equally gross, Mark Robinson could be the governor. stay tuned to find out. Anyway, unfortunately, that is all the time we have for the first hour of the Damage Report. But don't worry, in the aftermath, we have more fun. Tucker Carlson also being gross. But then what's going to come from the Hollywood writers' strike? We've got that and Garbage People of the Week after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.